What's up, Dune fans? Welcome back to the Do Not Enter podcast, where today, Paul faces a poison deadlier than spice. I'm your host, Humphrey Shu, and joining me are my friends and co-hosts, Fillmore John.
What's up, guys?
And Nolan Zhang.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back, everyone. And today, we will be covering the second half of chapter 45 of the book, Dune. And this is episode 61, so another episode, another week, and some more fun. Right. So before we get started, anything new from this past week that you guys want to update us on?
I've been driving like almost every single day of this week because I've been trying really hard to learn how to like get my license, obviously. Cool. Trying to park, trying to like drive around. I'm like kind of scared to like drive like past 30 miles per hour, but I'm like doing my best. I'm just really hard to hit like 30 plus miles per hour on local roads and like really get a feel for it because there's so many like low turns and bends and like little cars. Yeah. I don't really know. Like, is it easier to drive fast? I don't know.
It really depends. I mean, it kind of depends on the circumstances. So when I started, there's this road close to my school, and it's basically just, I think it's at 35 miles per hour or something, but it's just it's just straight with a few stop signs. So it's just really good to like get a feel for the speed and stuff. So if you can find one of those roads, that's pretty nice. Yeah, just like literally just keep going straight. Yeah, and but I mean, otherwise it's nice to hear that you're learning to drive, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, when you first start, I think pedal control is probably the hardest, like figuring how much force you need to put
in. And sometimes, especially when I started, I was just driving in a parking lot, so it was low risk, but sometimes I just mix up the pedals and that did not go well.
Yes, like
I ran to a curb once because I just pressed on the accelerator instead of the brakes. But
this one time I was trying to reverse park and then I almost crashed into a pole because I hit the accelerator instead of the brake.
That still happens to me every once in a while when I get really absent-minded. I need to break that habit. But you know, when I'm backing out of my driveway and then just hit the accelerator for a little bit, at least I can react fast enough now, you know. But
I mean, once you're older, like your reaction speed goes down.
Sure. So, but I mean, that I won't need to worry about that for another 4 years. But that's really exciting stuff. Young. Yeah, so I mean, my man Nolan's gonna be out on the roads, you know.
Yeah. Watch out, guys.
We have another crazy Texan driver.
here comes another Texan driver. Man, it's a wild creature.
In the wild, wild west.
Yeah, you'll never know. You never know what's coming with these Texan drivers, you know. It's just signal
like
left,
cast them off guard.
Yeah, signal left, turn right type of beat.
Or just don't signal at all.
Oh yeah, don't be one of those guys, please.
Yeah, I mean half the Texan drivers don't even know what a blinker is.
That's so true.
That just frustrates me sometimes. Like, come on, you know. But I mean, I'm too much of a rule follower on the road, so I'm just like always signaling. Maybe
I'll even. Well, I mean, it's good for other people's safety. So.
Yeah, true. At least people around me know what's going on.
I mean, you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I just learned this recently. So if you're like having a lot of trouble switching lanes off the highway, which is like me, because sometimes I have a little trouble, like I'm like not as comfortable. So you just turn on your hazard lights and then everyone's forced to let you off to the road. It's kind of like, it's like a cheat, I guess.
That's not a very ethical life hack.
But it's just like, you know, if you're like actually struggling, you know, just you're to stressed, make everyone think that your car broke down or something and just switch off.
Anyways,
I mean, I don't know how
encouraging any behavior.
Yeah, not encouraging anything like that. Please don't do that. But, you know, But I mean,
if you're in a pinch, like, we're not going to say anything.
Yeah.
And you never heard it from us.
Yeah, we never said anything about that, right? Yeah, so.
Yep.
Anyways, yeah, so fun stuff. Before we dive into the bulk of the chapter, we need to do our quotes. So, Fillmore, as usual, you have the first quote.
Okay, my quote this week is, "There is in each of us an ancient force that takes and an ancient force that gives."
Yeah. He who giveth also taketh. I don't know what the actual quote is, but it's something. The giveth, take, I don't know.
And taketh away.
Yeah, he giveth and taketh away, something like that.
Yeah.
Cool quote. My quote goes, "Without the spice, they're blind."
So, wow.
Quite exclamatory from Paul.
The spice makes up their eyes.
Yeah.
For my quote of the week, it goes, It's as easy to be overwhelmed by giving as by taking.
Yeah, so two giver and taker quotes. So let's see what y'all's takes are on those.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Indeed. I didn't even notice until I said that, so pun not intended. Yeah.
Wow. He's just a natural poet.
Indeed. Always, there's always a gear in the back of my brain going, how can I make this the worst pun possible?
Right. He's the next Dr. Seuss.
Hey, oh, but Dr. Seuss had some good stuff, you know, at least it was original. I'm just rehashing everything I've read in the, you know, in the books I haven't read. So
you're just being a poser.
Uh-huh, indeed. Yeah. So let's dive into the bulk of the chapter then. So we come back to chapter 45 right after Shani revives Paul using the poison or the water of life. So Jessica is trying to change it, but Paul says it's unnecessary. So that kind of pride coming as usual. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's unnecessary. Don't do that. But
I'm good.
Yeah, but actually Paul drank the sacred water in the first place. So he didn't, you know, need to change because he changed it himself, but he's not chugging it. He's only drank one drop, which is really funny. Just imagine, you know, just drinking drops of water at a time. And which is just imagine going, you know, going to like a bar and just like wine tasting or something, or like coffee tasting, right? A little more school appropriate coffee tasting. And you just try one drop at a time. That would be so frustrating. It's just like, yeah, this
I mean,
seems,
you can't even taste it. At
yeah. It just seems to taste good, but I'm going to need a few 10,000s more of those drops for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, but this one drop was very potent. So if this one drop, you know, contained all the poison that he needed, and it was enough to put him in a trance of 3 weeks. What I found weird about this was that Paul actually drank the water at the ceremony, right? But I mean, I'm assuming that was the changed water, and Paul just drank the.
Yeah.
This time he drank the unchanged water. And he tried to change himself, and it seems. But however, it seems that they have vastly different effects. So we'll find out a little bit later what these effects are.
Mm-hmm. Something that's funny to me is just how surprised and almost angry Jessica is at Paul, you know, but also at the same time, just how unsurprised Chani is to the point where she's like. He is your son. Wait, but like...
Oh, Shawnee's seen some stuff.
Yep.
I know. She sees the similarities, but it's okay. But the thing is, like, how exactly did they revive Paul in the first place, you know? Because, like, from what I understand, Chani basically, like, dipped her finger into the water of life, and then she kind of just, like, put it beneath his nose, and, like, it's supposed to be this deadly poison, you know, when ingested, and then she's using it as, like, what, a smelling salt? And Paul's like... And, whoa, and he just like flares up and just like wakes up, you know, like I don't know, like it's crazy.
Like, what happened?
What was in the spice? Like, was it that like nasty of a smell or something? Like, it just pulled him out of his trance.
Yeah, I mean, that part was really confusing because I mean, I think your description of it was pretty accurate though. Like, it's a smelling salt and he just woke up after feeling it on his lip or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah,
honestly, I would have just dumped the water on his face because that might have been effective as well.
Yeah,
that's true.
Well, I mean, then he might have really overdosed. Yeah,
he might have just like started dying and like choking,
flopping like a fish.
Oh no, fish on land, indeed. Yeah, literally poison water. But yeah, so after this whole thing, Paul has finally defined himself as the Kwisatz Haderach. So. It's something that we've basically known all along. But yeah. I mean, Paul, however, he's a little bit confused. He believes he's been only out for a few minutes, but I guess it's like an anesthetic or something. So time passes so differently for him when he was having his visions. He can't believe that 3 whole weeks have passed for him. Like, wow.
I think just like despite having gone to so many places and achieving unfathomable insight, being the Kwisatz Haderach apparently doesn't stop an individual from spacing out, you know. He spaced out for 3 good weeks. In fact, like, I'm guessing this like whole thing might just be like a side effect of being the Kwisatz Haderach, because being so many places at once really just like takes its toll on one's body, you know. It's hard to be everywhere, it's hard to like see everyone. Like, he's popular, you know, guys. We get it.
Yeah, I mean,
he went on tour.
Yeah, I need some of this water of life. I need to space out for 3 weeks, man. Waiting for these college decisions are stressful, bro.
Facts, man.
Yeah, I need to just sleep for 3 weeks. You know, wake up in like early April and just be done with everything.
Refreshed.
Yeah,
I want to sleep for half a year so I can go to college already.
Honestly, that's even better for me.
Honestly,
yeah, that's even better for me.
Yeah, but I mean, getting back on topic. I would expect it to have some drawbacks, or else, I mean, it would just be way too broken of an ability. Because,
yeah,
I mean, being able to be everywhere at once is just really overpowered. But I think the trade-off is well worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I wonder how Shani immediately comes up with the notion that Paul drank the water of life. So did Jessica seriously think for 3 weeks and not come up with this? I mean, and I'm assuming it's somewhat obvious because Shani comes up with this idea immediately. So I don't know why Jessica didn't test it. Right. I mean, Shani's not more powerful than Jessica, nor does she really know Paul better than Jessica. Right. I mean, I feel like they have some equal amounts of knowledge in how they behave. Right.
I mean, okay, here's my idea. I think I kind of disagree with your last statement, but I guess it might be compounded with the fact that Jessica might just be like overlooking the obvious, because she's like, Paul could never, you know, he's my son. He's more rational than that. But on top of that, I think maybe Chani might know Paul a little better than Jessica, especially like because Jessica has kind of been away from Paul for a really, really long time, especially like ever since he hinted that like, as he got more integrated into Fremen society, he began blocking her kind of more and more off emotionally, because he kind of didn't like her toying with his future and, like, you know, like stringing him along and like making him the Kwisatz Haderach and like empowering what he was so afraid of, you know, the jihad. And besides, like, Chani's intuition has always naturally been like there, like really strong and present. And she's got like this ability to remain calm, which is exactly what was tested for last chapter, you know, like this, like, element is exactly what they need to get out of this mess. Just the characteristics that Jessica highlighted last episode.
Yeah, and it's also because Paul has always been a mama's boy, so she sort of expected him to let her know before attempting something so dangerous.
Yeah,
but now that he's done something completely unexpected, like only someone who knows the current version of Paul would be able to guess what he did to get in that state. But Jessica, I mean, she's been cut off from him for so long. Like what you said.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't really know what happened.
Yeah. Paul's finally, you know, spreading his wings and flying on his own. He's flying solo.
Taking those risks. Yeah.
I'm so proud of him.
Yeah. Aren't we all? Aren't we all? Yeah.
For the almost dying part.
Oh, yeah. He better not. He better not die on us. I mean, we still want to keep reading. That's for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, so Paul scares Shani and Jessica by now chugging the water of life. So earlier I said he drank one drop, but now he's just getting fistfuls of it. I mean, what a waste, right? But he says that he can now change it just like a Reverend Mother can. So is now Paul greater than the Reverend Mother's, like in terms of abilities, or does Paul kind of possess their abilities? Is Paul's abilities kind of a superset of the Reverend Mother's abilities?
Yeah, so apparently that's what I also assume as well, because now, like, he could do this, he could basically do what they were able to do in the past. You know, like, he basically meets the criterion to become a Reverend Mother in the Fremen's eyes. And he's got, like, the same, like, he brings his confidence and humor, and he's got enough of that to make a whole statement out of it, even though he almost died. He's like, drinks more of it, even though he almost died from a single drop. And now, like, Jessica's like appalled, and Chani's like, stop it.
Yeah, he's just kind of the rebellious teen, kind of just like, look at me, I can do this. Just, yeah.
I mean, this action is still pretty rash, though, because I mean, he was able to convert one drop of poison, and now he instantly starts chugging the water. I mean, I get that he's super confident in his abilities, but I mean, if he didn't have the plot armor, I would have quit reading the book right here, because, well, I mean, he would be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just right there on the boundary. Yeah, so, I mean, this whole chunk of text here after, you know, when Paul just kind of sidles up to Jessica and demands her memories, I mean, it just kind of feels like the mind-linking thing from the inheritance cycle, which is something I haven't referred to in a while, but I won't ever stop referring to it. And it's just a connecting consciousness. And so I got to read this whole chunk, which it starts... Quote, the report was not as tender, not as sharing, not as encompassing as it had been with Aaliyah and with the old Reverend Mother in the cavern. But it was a report, a sense sharing of the entire being. It shook her, weakened her, and she cowered in her mind, fearful of him. Aloud, he said, you speak of a place where you cannot enter. This place which the Reverend Mother cannot face. Show it to me. She shook her head, terrified by the very thought. Show it to me, he commanded. No. But she could not escape him. Bludgeoned by the terrible force of him, she closed her eyes and focused inward the direction that is dark. Paul's consciousness flowed through and around her and into the darkness. She glimpsed the place dimly before her mind blinked itself away from the terror. Without knowing why, her whole being trembled at what she had seen. A region where wind blew and sparks glared, where rings of light expanded and contracted, where rows of tumescent white shapes flowed over and under and around the lights, driven by darkness and a wind out of nowhere.
Mm, wow. Beautiful writing.
Man, originally I was just going to read the last paragraph, but I mean, I was just thinking, you know, oh, if I'm going to read the last paragraph, I kind of have to read the whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. It's better that you did, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
For context, everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but for some reason, it reminded me of that scene where Aragorn is taking energy from the animals that are about to be killed. And I mean, when they eventually are, he feels himself getting pulled into the void with him. And it's not a very happy scene, but the scene is quite similar to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of just one kind of domineering consciousness pulling and just tugging. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I want to point out is that this whole connecting of consciousnesses, however, isn't exactly a new concept in the book. Right. We've seen it with Jessica, Saint Aaliyah, and like the old Reverend Mothers when they, you know, became Reverend Mothers with Aaliyah in the womb. However, when Paul does it, it is slightly different. You know, it's a lot more different, I guess. Paul, unlike the others, is more forceful, like forcing himself in uninvited, right? So like this violation on such a personal, so touching level. It's just kind of what Jessica's so fearful of. Like, at least we're powerless against Paul's demand to see into the place where she and every other Reverend Mother in the past, but also like in the future, will never be able to see. And now, like, they can never go there. But then, like, let's talk about what Jessica sees now that Paul enabled her to see this alongside him. She sees rings of light expanding and contracting and floating white shapes, right? So, like, these white shapes floating around this place kind of remind me of her and Aaliyah's like soul sparks, you know, like maybe this is like the space where the souls converge and they flit around waiting to move on to another person or another place. And I'm not really sure, but like how I see the wind and stuff is like the wind is like the constantly changing timelines, you know, causing souls to be shifted around to different lights, which to me also like might just prove to be nexus points within the timelines that Paul keeps referring to. You know, like he keeps speaking of these nexus points, which are really important, where all like the timelines converge and like a single decision on these nexus points will change the entirety of the future timelines because of how important it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty deep in his thinking. I mean, these nexus points, how many of them do you think we've encountered so far? Probably too many to count at this point.
Yeah.
I think there's been like several key ones, you know, like the storm and like, you know, just.
Oh, yeah,
like,
definitely the storm. And then that part when he was standing in front of all the Fremen and making that speech. I would say that's
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just all the critical moments in the book, honestly, they've all kind of really relied on Paul's actions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Paul also says my quote of this week, which is, "There is in each of us an ancient force that takes and an ancient force that gives." And then I'll add on to it because there's a part after it. "A man finds little difficulty facing that place within himself where the taking force dwells, but it's almost impossible for him to see into the giving force without changing into something other than man. For a woman, the situation is reversed." So what he said here is quite confusing until you take into account what just happened. So he basically says that men are able to easily take, but not give, and for women, the opposite. So in order for him to get those memories from Jessica, he needs to take them from a woman. And since Jessica is a woman, she's able to easily give those memories up. And I mean, he could have at least been a little bit gentler in the way he took them because he kind of messed her up. But
yeah, I just yeah. Sees them. Yeah.
Just yeah.
No unreasonable search and seizure. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing.
Yeah. What memo was that? Like,
I don't know.
It's the fourth.
Fourth. I think fourth.
Fourth. Okay. Obviously, I should get a refresher on my constitution, right?
And I'm taking. I mean, my government teacher would be very angry at me for not knowing exactly which amendment that is. But
I think my government teacher would be proud of me for, I think, getting that right.
Well, y'all let us know, I guess.
Mm. Yep.
Okay, but back to like what we just went over in the book. I don't really want to be the type of person who really like points out like gender roles here, but I'm like kind of interested at why Herbert associated the whole giving and taking analogy to gender. Like, why does men have to be the takers and why does women have to be the givers, right? Like, I remember how other aspects of gender roles did kind of show up in earlier, like the writing from like earlier chapters in the book. But I think like the current issue is just like, because Herbert wanted to build upon the idea of that, like in Bene Gesserit society, there's like selective breeding for a reason, you know, like every single aspect of a person, of an individual, like even their genders plays a large influence on what role they can play as a, as like a part of the society, because that's like what true humans are. It's still a little bit of weird writing, but like I'm just trying to make some sense out of it, and I'm guessing he's just like playing into that plot, but like it's still strange coming from a modern perspective, seeing like how certain, like how rigid the gender roles are, I guess.
Yeah, so I wonder why there haven't been Bene Gesserit men before.
Or like haven't tried to be. In
order. Yeah, was there ever an explanation for that? I don't recall one, right? Because
I think they did mention that there were previous candidates for the Kwisatz Haderach, and they all just died.
But I don't know why they have to. Can't they just be Bene Gesserit without being the Kwisatz Haderach? Like, I don't know.
That's what I was thinking as well. Yeah, but I think it relies on their tradition of just having women within it.
Yeah, but then I feel like they're just shutting themselves off of new information.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
They depend so much on ancestry.
Yeah, it would just bring in a whole different perspective.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least to my understanding, if they could always have seen the other side, you know, the paternal lineage side, then wouldn't that have been valuable information? Right. Because from what I understand, you can't link a female and male Bene Gesserit, because that would destroy each other, probably what we just saw. But without this connection of consciousness, they can still help each other, right? So they don't have to like
talk about it, you know.
Yeah, just talk it through, you know. You don't have to do anything fancy and share minds and stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean that would be the simple solution, but maybe it's just I think it's just the plot.
Yeah, they're fond of overcomplicating things, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, Paul says that the greatest peril to the giver is the force that takes, and the greatest peril to the taker is the force that gives. But meanwhile, Paul is at the fulcrum where he cannot take without giving or give without taking. So it's sort of like the old saying, eye for an eye, but he's referring to memories this time. And I'm not entirely sure what this means, though, because it looks like the process is dangerous for both parties. But since Paul is at the fulcrum, is it not dangerous for him at all?
Yeah, so just like help. Personal is the process to Paul, right? Because if we take the analogy of like where Paul is like the timekeeper, then like whatever goes on in the realms that the timekeeper controls, like has control over, really rarely affects the timekeeper themselves, because they're like a third party entity that's like really separate from the worlds that they're influencing with their like little, like, you know, like what do you call them, like, oh, I'm forgetting, like the sand stopwatches.
I don't even know what those are called. The hourglass.
Oh my gosh, the hourglass. I'm so dumb.
Man, we all blanked on that for a second.
We all had a blank moment.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to go study my vocab.
But yeah, so like we have that analogy, and it's just like, you know, the timekeeper's like flipping over all these hourglasses, and like it doesn't really affect him, even though it's probably destroying entire timelines with that. But like in that regard, like the thing is, like, Paul's different, though. Like, unlike the timekeeper, Paul's actively trying to, like, tap into the process of this, and is trying to, like, use each of this, like, timelines to his own advantage by, like, directly manipulating it. And, like, he's, like, directly involved in it because, like, he lives there, you know? Like, the timeline that he's changing is his own, unlike the timekeeper, which lives separately, you know? So, in that regard, like, there's probably definitely side effects to this. I just wonder what they are. It's like, for example, if he slips up and say, like, takes too much without giving back enough, what are the consequences, right? Like, does it take away from his lifespan or something to compensate for that? I don't know. Like, what do y'all think?
I mean, I'm not sure whether it's, like, a lifespan thing. But since he still has a portion of this taker, I don't even know what to call it, taker mentality, taker like cult nature, I guess, taker nature, then probably he's still harmed with regards to that portion. But however, his giver side might balance it out, right? So, I mean, I can't really tell, but all I can say is the reason Jessica wasn't destroyed and was only drained of energy was because of this combination, because the taker side that Paul possesses isn't strong enough to overwhelm her. Because if it was just all this taker side, then it would just destroy her, right?
Yeah, but right. I mean, Paul didn't seem to be affected at all, so I guess it doesn't really do anything to him.
I guess, yeah, I guess I, in my opinion, it really just come down to mastery of the skill, and Paul's just like quick on the uptake and everything, basically.
Yeah, he already has it all down, even though he just got it.
Yeah, my man's like a quick learner. For real.
A little jealous, but yeah. So we get to my quote of the week, which is, it's as easy to be overwhelmed by giving as by taking. So at first, this quote seems a little confusing, but when you think about it, it kind of makes more sense. So let me just, I guess, break it down, I guess. So both the act of giving and taking is an active task. You know, like you have to give, you have to take. It's all like action verbs, you know? I'd say at least for me, though, it's kind of like it's most prevalent. It's like this exchange of action is most prevalent during the instance of gift giving, right? Both as the receiver and as the giver. So the thing is, though, like we all basically can probably agree that gift giving is probably a lot harder than receiving gifts because, like, well, you know, like it's easy to take in gifts, but like I'm sure there's some scenarios where receiving is hard, you know, as well.
But it's just so for on average, yeah.
Yeah, on average, you know, like, so for instance, maybe a hard scenario of receiving a gift is like if you got a bad gift from a well-meaning, like, family member who expects you to cherish it for your whole life and then wear it at the next family junction, you know? It's like, you hate it. And like, it's like an ugly sock that they gave me with an ugly sweater. I'm never wearing that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like back to the consciousness and stuff, I think in the realm of consciousness and visions, I presume that taking all the information from consciousness is a definite struggle because of how much information overload is coming into someone's brain, as we saw throughout the book during like Paul and Aaliyah just like receiving so much when they like become powerful, right? Mm-hmm. However, I think Paul now has this like unique ability to I guess give back, right? Like he's not just taking anymore from like the environmental factors. He's able to what I call like pulse, basically. Like, he's giving an impulse, you know, like he's sending out his own little pulse through the realm of consciousness. And I'm really sure that like, well, he's making it look easy, but I'm sure it takes a toll on him. I'm sure it takes some effort to package and to amplify the message that he desires to like the person that he's touching, which is Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's like a philanthropist just giving out free memories.
He's like, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Man, like, here you go.
He's such like a conduit for all this stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he just conducts all of it through.
It's a generator.
It overwhelms whoever's on the other side.
Yep.
Yeah, so kind of pulling back from this intense conversation, we hear the drapes go swinging, you know. Othame, I think it's Othame, maybe. This guy, man, what a snoop. He was listening in on everything that was happening. And I mean, this whole religion thing is spiraling out of control. So even more fanaticism at hand here. Even Paul just goes and just straight up says, you know, he will talk and he will tell everyone and the word will spread like fire. Yeah, and
he's a snitch.
Yeah, okay. But the more interesting thing is Paul does nothing to stop him. So I wonder why Paul doesn't try to get Othame to keep to himself.
Maybe he likes it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's his goal. But I mean, from how he reacted, it definitely wasn't, right? So, I mean, I wish he wouldn't let the rumors spread so easily, especially if they get to enemy lines. Then Paul's value just keeps increasing. You know, there's more of a bounty on his head.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like even if he got Othame to keep to himself, it would eventually get out. Because I mean, I don't think
Othame has to come out, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's really the wait. What did you say? He has to come out?
not that way.
Oh, okay. But I feel like Othame is the type of guy to not keep things under wraps. I think it would get out eventually.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it looks like the guild lowered their transport prices, and that was quite the shocking moment, because to think that they would ever lower their costs, that's just...
economical.
Exactly. I mean, they must be pretty comfortable with the money they already made to make such a decision.
Mm-hmm.
I know, right? They must be like on the retirement, they're like busy cruising, and they're like, we got so much money, we don't need any more money, just like throwing it around now.
Yeah.
I don't know, but the thing is, like, maybe they're just like they're delivering less spice now because like the Fremen have been kind of doing their best to control it from the Harkonnens, right? So right. Maybe like now that there's less spice flowing around, there's more ships to go around. But yeah, I am really surprised that this monopoly is like relinquishing their control on their service. After all, like, that's what they do best, and why should they compromise on price? But I think there's ultimately an ulterior motive to this, which is probably what's happening in this scenario. You know, they're enabling instigators to do their bidding, and we catch a glimpse of who they're enabling, right? We catch the glimpse of the Emperor, the Imperium, the Sardaukar, and all the other great houses. The entire universe is like banded together to trap Paul and the Fremen on the godforsaken rock. I don't even know. Like, they're all stuck here, like, facing an army of, like, who knows how many. It just feels bad to be Paul and the Fremen, almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, what does the Spacing Guild have to gain from spreading rumors about what the Fremen are doing? I'm assuming these rumors are about the conversion of Arrakis into greenery and those oases and all of that, right? Because, I mean, I thought the Fremen were paying the guild to not do that. I mean, is these rumors they're spreading, is it because once that this whole, you know, greenery thing happens, the spice is gone and any great house, the Imperium and the guild just can't let that happen? They wouldn't be able to survive without that? Is that the reason why?
Yeah, I don't know.
A lot more people relying on the spice than we think.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a whole, like, universal thing, you know, but it's like...
It is kind of bad.
Kind of like the opioid addiction, but to a much larger scale, right?
Yeah, I'm surprised the planet hasn't run out of spice yet.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's renewable because it keeps generating itself through the makers.
Right, but we still don't know how that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
Or, like, completely, we don't know.
Yeah, so we just have no clue what the Spacing Guild are going for here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something that's interesting to me, though, is just that while the guild, but like, has allowed everyone to gather over Arrakis, though, like, they're at the same time the only things that are really preventing the congregation from, like, touching down on Arrakis, you know? Like, everyone's here, but, like, you gotta wait a bit, you know? So it is kind of interesting because what are they trying to buy time for? Like, is the guild hoping to find Paul and the Fremen before the other people do? And, like, if they do locate Paul and the Fremen, then what are they going to do? Like, what do they want from them? And what will they use to bargain for? Because if the transportation isn't enough, if the selling the spice is not enough anymore, and they're like, what exactly can they offer to Paul and the Fremen to make them desire the guild, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, exactly, right? What does Paul have to offer the guild and everyone else apart from the fact that maybe the Harkonnens want to eliminate the Atreides? I mean, they don't really know anything about what the Kwisatz Haderach is. I don't think the Baron is particularly in tune with the Bene Gesserit. And also, they probably don't really know the legends past, you know, Muad'Dib and Lys El Gaib and stuff. So, yeah, he's a religious kind of powerhouse. He's also just, you know, an Atreides powerhouse. But he doesn't really have anything to offer apart from power. It's not like he can produce spice. He just vomits up spice, or that he's useful alone, right? I don't know, have rumors of his prescient ability spread, maybe? That's, like, valuable, that he could see the future. Because I'm just not really seeing the value here, as you said. What could they want to send so many forces against Paul just to find him? It just seems like such a overbearing thing for all these great houses.
Mm-hmm. It honestly, just doesn't seem worth, like, their time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Paul is, like, talented and all, but, like... You know, like, when we're thinking about money, what money does Paul bring? I'm not sure. Like, how much can seeing the future bring you when you don't, like, when he just, like, when, like, he just can barely handle the future that much. Like, he can't see that far into the future without getting some jumbled up mess. So it's just, like, if they truly knew the value that Paul brings, would they still want him then? Because, like, if they knew how uncertain everything that he predicts is, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't rely on Paul to guess lottery numbers, although he would probably get them all right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but he'd probably just change them on a whim just to defy the future and then get them all wrong.
Yeah, he'd probably, like, see half the numbers on your ballot, on like, your ticket, and he'd ask you to, like, you know, scratch out all of them, you know?
Yeah, just like, I don't want to bring the jihad. You winning, like, I can see the connection. You winning the lottery will bring the jihad. Yeah,
kind of. Then you buy all the mercenaries and then there's just too many people around. It's like,
yeah, I can't let that happen. Yeah, no, you're gonna have to pass up this $1 billion here. Nope, not letting that happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
And something interesting to note here is a pre-spice math. And I'm assuming that this is the stage before spice becomes harvestable. But adding water to it will cause a chain reaction of death. So I'm pretty confused here, because what is the connection between the worms and spice if killing off the worms kills the production of spice?
Yeah.
So basically, adding water to the spice or pre-spice will just kill off the worms. And I don't really see where the connection is. And also, wouldn't that be bad for the Fremen? Because if they don't have spice, they would eventually die from withdrawals.
Yeah, because, like, this is pretty confusing, as I kind of assume that fully matured spice doesn't have this issue, because I'm sure like they drink water while consuming, you know, spice in order to live. Yeah, like spiced coffee and stuff. However, like this kind of goes back to the fact that water is a deadly poison to the worms. So we kind of see that like there's something there, but we just don't really know what it is, because what exactly does that have to do with the byproduct that the worms create?
Right.
And if that is the truth of it, then it's like, what is the, then the Fremen plan to terraform their entire planet basically means getting rid of the only major bargaining chip that they have on the universe, you know, like the spice, you know, like they're going to basically put water, or like put enough water to make green plants. Now, if there's going to be no more spice left, and then what are the Fremen going to do? They have nothing else to trade with. They have nothing else to like of value other than maybe their fighting abilities, but still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just really backwards for me. The Fremen can't even survive without the spice. If the spice is so poisonous, then they destroy the spice. Nobody's going to survive, right? And I mean, the Fremen are essentially holding all, I mean, just kind of an analogy. They're basically holding all their spice with their back to ravine and being like, if you go one step further, I'm going to hop off this cliff, right? And I mean, yes, they definitely be a threat. They're a threat to the universe, but especially they're a threat to themselves, because if they were to execute a plan like this, they would destroy themselves. So Paul is really creating kind of a end all be all plan. He's just calling their bluff and being like, you know, you can't touch us. If you touch us, the spice is the first
we're
thing.
We're all dead.
Going. Yeah, like if I'm going down, I'm taking you down with me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Less sophisticated than I like to believe, but basically, yeah, it's like we're all going down together.
Yeah, it's just man's going down with the ship, but he's just taking everyone down with him.
This is the Titanic.
He's going to make the whirlpool, and we're also going to drag all the neighboring boats in with him.
True, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it like if a giant boat begins to sink, it sort of creates a whirlpool around it?
I think it's like depends on the situation. I know for the Titanic specifically that people were scared of it, so the lifeboats didn't go back towards the ship to rescue those people floating in the water. But yeah, actually, yeah, the Titanic created almost no whirlpool. So, but people were just scared of it in general. So it's kind of ironic.
Wants to be sunk. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty
ended
ironic.
Up killing more people.
Yeah. So I mean, but
it's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So my quote for this week was, quote, without the spice, they're blind. So I had to read the chapter a few times to really settle on this quote, but it just shows that, following from what I said earlier, how important the spice is as a bargaining chip. And literally, mm-hmm. Paul holds the universe and technological expansion in his hands. Those guild navigators that he's talking about, they literally transcend time and they scout ahead during time for literally fourth dimension, right? And these guys depend on the spice. Everyone in the universe who depends on the spice as a support of life depends on the spice. Everything is down to the spice, and therefore the Fremen who control it. And Paul is just, again, calling their bluff. The universe is at stake here, and everyone's banking on Paul to either destroy or not destroy the spice. And I mean, I can't really see a good alternative. I mean, if the spice is destroyed, then basically everyone dies. But if the spice is not destroyed, then, you know, there's going to be very bloody war. So
yeah, the cycle of war will continue.
Yeah, so
there's no way out, though. There's no way out.
I feel like it's so resembling of Dune, or it resembles Dune as a whole. I feel like it's just people forcing themselves into lose-lose situations. And this is kind of what's happening here, right? It's just nobody's going to be a clear winner, whether the spice is destroyed or not. It's not like Paul is just like vindicated and he's just, yes, I knew I was right kind of person, right? And so it's just this whole lose-lose. I mean, they created it themselves, and now it's just a way they have to find a way out of this lose-lose situation. But I mean, due to the nature of lose-lose situations, there's no easy win.
Mm-hmm. Loki sounds like the plot of Attack on Titan.
Oh, really? I don't actually know that. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you know like what the story is, then it's kind of similar in that way. It's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
I had this weird thought, though. Like, what if the Fremen actually get like a small W from this? Because in the fact that like, in the idea that they don't rely on the spice to survive, and then they take away all their planets, like appeal to the rest of the universe, then technically they do reclaim their planet and lose all the colonizers, I guess. So they get their little utopia, and everyone else is salty because they lost their spice. And it's just like, screw everyone, I guess.
They might actually leave the Fremen alone. Together. They might actually leave the Fremen alone.
I know, like,
we're
all happy together now.
Yeah, if there's no spice, there's nothing left to get, right?
Fight over.
Yeah. I mean, that's one solution.
Uh-huh, yeah. So I guess. Yeah, bye-bye, spice.
There goes everything nice.
Yep.
Anyways, well, the final words of the chapter aren't very bright ones. Paul says that all paths lead to darkness, which isn't exactly the happy ending we were looking for. However, it's the path that the hero chooses between the dilemmas, well, the dilemmas given to him, that makes the story interesting. So look forward to the next episode where we get ever so close to the final showdown between the Emperor and Paul.
The thing is, like, Paul to me, but also to Chani, who he's actually explaining this to, is really confusing right now because he's like, I see the present. But at the same time, he sees the timelines of the future and the past, and they're all melding in together, in and out of his visions, right? Like, he's weaving them all together really complicatedly, and he's trying to make sense of it. And we already know basically the future is confusing for Paul because of how many timelines there are for him. But then can we safely assume then that the past and the present are at least stable for Paul to peer into just because they're happening already or they're happening now?
Yeah, so I mean, it seems that Paul has been successful peering into the past as he is the Kwisatz Haderach, and he saw things with the water of life. He was hallucinating. And however, I think this peeking to the present thing is new. So what can Paul do with all this information? All this new insight that he's gained, he's now, you know, he has this internal radar of everything on the map, and
it's crazy.
No matter what, you know, if all the troops above Arrakis descend onto him at once, he'll be swept away like a feather in a storm, right? I mean, there's just nothing. The Fremen can't combat the entire universe against them, and it honestly does feel like that. The entire universe is against them, and I'm really curious to see Paul's strategies here. It seems that we're building to an inevitable conclusion of the first novel. So stay tuned for, I'm hoping, some action very soon. And on that note, I believe that concludes the discussion for this episode of the Dune Not Enter podcast. Make sure to read to the end of chapter 46 in Dune in next time when we discuss it. As always, thanks to all of you listeners for being patient with us and being interested in our thoughts. Follow us on Instagram at Dune Not Enter, Reddit, you search Do Not Enter, Twitter at Do Not Enter, and email us at donotenter@gmail.com. That is donotenter@gmail.com. Please contact us with questions, feedback, or I dare say corrections. I think we made some mistakes this episode. So
yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
I agree.
So we said it this time. We won't make mistakes anymore. Yeah, so
never again.
Never again. Otherwise, give us a review on iTunes or Spotify. It only takes a few seconds of your time. So just go and make an account, of course. Go to our show and click the 5-star button because, you know, that's the only one that exists. And also leave a nice comment or two if you are so inclined. The reasons for this are twofold. One, it helps get our podcast up the charts so that we can get it out to a wider variety of listeners. But also, on a more personal note, it lets us know that we're doing a good job and motivates us to keep creating content for you guys. So do those things and it would be very much appreciated. Otherwise, have a great week and we will see you all back very soon.
See you guys.
Bye, guys.